All right. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the fourth and final installment of our McGillis Roast series. Tonight, we're going to tackle the personality of Naomi. And tonight, there's really going to have to be a transition because the first week of this year, we set the national background for Bnei Yisrael in the aftermath of Sefer Shoftim. We then tried to show how the personalities who fall short in the Megillah all have the same pattern. None of them are bad. There are no bad guys. There are no villains in Sefer and Megillah Saras. We have people who do not go lifnim mishuras adin. They do not go beyond the letter of the law. We saw the basic argument the Megillah is putting forward is that when it comes to chesed, there really are two extremes. There's the extreme of all in on chesed, exemplified by Rus and exemplified by Boaz. Somebody who is not willing to go all in, inevitably, it's going to lead ultimately to disaster. That was the national story that Bnei Yisrael had across the story of Sefer Shoftim, which began with Shevet Yehuda saying, "Hey, we'll go to war, but only if you're going to help us." In the end, they're launching a civil war, and then we saw that with all three personalities, you know, Arpa. With Elimelech, with Ploni Almoni, none of them bad, but the fact that they're not willing to go all in ultimately leads to them going out into oblivion. We then saw with Rus and with Boaz, really two sides of two chesed archetypes, we could say. Rus being the person who just gave everything she had. All we see in every single parak, all Rus does is give and give and give and give. She gives up herself, leaving her whole family to go with Naomi. She gives up her dignity, going out to glean for Naomi in the fields. She's willing to give up everything she stands for, going to Boaz at night. She's willing to give up her future, give up her own child by marrying Boaz and then giving the child to Naomi. A woman who was not one who does much talking, but one who did a lot of doing and a lot of giving. Boaz was the communal leader. He was the person, man of the people. He's the one who talks and talks. He'll talk to anybody. He'll talk to everybody. But he's able to use that charisma, use that energy, use that comfort in public to uplift the people all around him. And somebody who, while, you know, being very enthusiastic with what he said, that did not detract at all from his discipline in terms of what he did. Chazal looked in awe at the discipline that Boaz is able to have that night with Rus in the field, where they say that what Yosef did is an embarrassment, that it's nothing compared to what Boaz is able to do. It was that combination of integrity and generosity and willpower, the ability to act on the communal level, which allows Boaz to be able to really move things in the second half of the Megillah. So now we turn to Naomi. And Naomi is somebody who we're going to have to do some work on because there's literally nothing bad that we could say about Rus. There is nothing bad that we could say about Boaz. They're pure tzaddikim. We can't criticize a single activity, a single decision they make, a single thing that they say in the entire Megillah. Naomi, though, we'll see, is much more complicated. She's more complicated in terms of what she says. She's more complicated in terms of what she does. And the question for us is going to be, it's obvious what the Megillah wants us to learn from Rus and what the Megillah wants us to learn from Boaz, but what does the Megillah want us to learn from Naomi? And as we'll see, in many ways, she may be the most important person because, you know, not all of us are saints. In many ways, Naomi might be the most relatable personality. So to see what role she's playing, I think, is going to be absolutely essential. And just to sketch it out before we open the source sheet and look in depth, I want to put out a couple of things that we should be thinking about. First of all, we're going to see Naomi grow. One difference between Naomi on the one hand versus Rus and Boaz, you know, the three heroes of the Megillah, we don't really see growth from Rus or from Boaz. They said with Rus, the minute she steps onto the field, Megillah said, the Rus dav kaba, Rus cleaves to Naomi. And that very first thing she does in the first parak defines her behavior throughout the rest of the Megillah. Boaz, he shows up, and the very first thing he says is Hashem Imachem. He's using his speech for good. He's interacting with everybody all around him. He's immediately impressed and generous with Rus. There's no growth from Boaz. They both come in at 100 and they end at 100. Naomi, we're going to see complication, but we're going to see growth. That's point number one. Point number two for us to keep in mind is that, you know, we can learn a lot about doing chesed from Rus and from Boaz. But the second thing to remember is, besides doing chesed, who is the kind of person who we do chesed for? You know, in many ways, it's very easy. And I shouldn't say very easy, but it is easier for Boaz to do chesed for a Rus. You know, when you have somebody who's just the most unbelievable person of all time, there's nothing bad we could say about her. She's given up everything for her mother-in-law. She's the greatest giores of all time. It's easy to understand the impetus to want to do chesed for somebody like that, who sacrificed so much and so obviously deserves help in return. But what does chesed look like when it's for somebody who, it's not so simple. It's not so obvious that they're purely good and just deserve us to respond in kind. Let's remember, besides being generous with what she does, Rus is extraordinary in terms of her hakaras hatov. Boaz was as well. You know, Rus is like picking grain off of the floor, and Boaz is generous to her. And Rus was overcome with gratitude. Remember when Rus said to Boaz, you know, why you recognize me, Vanochi Nachriya? She didn't even think that she deserved to be acknowledged as a human being. But she's overcome with gratitude. We'll see. Naomi, we're not going to have like that many thank you notes pouring in the mail for the chesed that's being done for Naomi. How do we do chesed when somebody is a little more complicated and the thank yous are not pouring in? And the last thing to think about is going to be, again, besides the growth of Naomi and what it means to do chesed for somebody who's not so easy a chesed opportunity, is to track the impact that chesed can have. That is going to be, I think, the third thing that we will see the Megillah analyze through the experience of Naomi, the impact of chesed. Okay, so now I'll load up the source sheet. I sent it out in the email earlier this evening, and now here we go. So start with a few of my makomos over here to kind of build up Naomi. Now, we're going to show how things are more complicated than that. So we should start off by building Naomi up. So there's no question, Chazal assume consistently that Naomi was a righteous woman. And we have to keep that in mind, even as we get to some of the more complicated pieces that are going to come through in a few minutes later on in this year. So the Medrash Rus Rabba comments, going through the different names of the personalities of the Megillah, Machlon and Kilion, which are etymologies, which are pretty dark, you know, references to sickness and to destruction. But Naomi, the Medrash says, It's pretty simple what the deeper meaning behind her name is. I mean, Miguel Medrash says, "Hayumasen Naim uniimim Naomi, extraordinarily pleasant woman. She's a woman of grace. She's a woman of kindness. Naomi is a, it says, atzadekes. It's even reflected in her name. That's point number one, right? Point number two. Rashi has an interesting comment towards the beginning of the Megillah. There are a couple of very, very important psukim. We have to revisit these in a couple of minutes. But when Naomi is leaving Moab after the death of her husband and her children, so the Megillah phrases it in a very strange way. The Megillah says, "Vatakam hi v'kalosah." So Naomi and her daughters-in-law get up. Let's count how many times they're leaving Moab. They get up. "Vatashav mi stay Moab," and they return from the fields of Moab. Because they had heard the rumor that Hashem had remembered his people, he had given them bread. So they got up and they left. And she left from the place where she had been. And her daughter's not with her. And they went on the road to return towards Yehuda. So that's many, many times we're being told. She got up. She returned, she left, she returned, and she went on the road. It's like five times in two psukim we're being told that she started traveling. So Rashi at least addresses the most blatant, the most blatantly superfluous of these activities. which is the beginning of Pasuk Zion. What do you mean she left the place? She's returning from love. Of course it's happening. So Rashi asks the question, Lama ne'emar, harei ne'emar, vateisha misnei moab. He told me one pasuk ago she left, so why do you have to tell me that she's leaving? How can you return from Moab unless you leave the place where you were? You know, when we learn Rashi, we know we have to ask what's bothering Rashi. This is one of those, you know, that's not rare, but not common Rashis, where he puts what's bothering him out on a silver platter. The problem is so blatant, he just puts it out there. Like, what's going on? Literally, Pasuk Zion is repeating Pasuk Vav. So that's Rashi's explanation. Elamagid sheyetzias tzadik ben hamakom nikeres ve'osa roshen. The departure of a righteous person from a place is recognized and leaves a mark. So Pasuk Vav is describing Naomi leaving. And then we go to Pasuk Zion, and the place feels the impact of Naomi leaving, right? So the Megillah is giving us two scenes. Naomi, there she goes. And now shift back to the desolate, barren, spiritually emptied land of Moab, which now feels the loss of the tzadikas of Naomi. Rashi says we've already seen this much, much earlier in Torah Shabbat Tzav, beginning of Parshas Vayetze. Vayetze Yaakov mi be'er Shava vayelech Charana. Why are they starting to tell me that Yaakov, if Yaakov is going towards Haran, by definition, he's leaving Be'er Sheva. So why does Torah tell us that Yaakov left Be'er Sheva? So there Rashi has the exact same explanation. It's telling us that when a tzaddik leaves, that makes an impact on the place where he has left. So Rashi then is comparing the departure of Naomi and Naomi herself to Yaakov Avinu. So a couple suck him in. We have a focus on her name. And we have Rashi's comment about her departure, building Naomi up as a particularly righteous woman. Probably the most dramatic spot in the pshat where we see the chesed of Naomi. You know, back in the first year when we said, I think we quoted the Dat Mikra, which argued that all three of the heroes of the Megillah engage in chesed, that is lefnim mishuras adin. So the example for Naomi, I think that captures this really the most strongly, maybe the only one which really captures it strongly, is the Sepharno's interpretation of what Naomi is doing in the beginning of the third parak. When Naomi turns to Rus and says, Biti halo avakesh lach manoach asher yitav lach. I'm going to try to give you rest so that it will be good for you. And then Naomi is going to give the plan, what she wants Rus to do with Boaz that night, which we'll have to revisit in a few minutes later on in this year. But we should also understand what the basic sacrifices that Naomi is preparing to make. The Sepharno comments, and then the Sepharno says, She'em kor hasadeh l'nidud nosayach. I am going to sell the field for your dowry, l'misha yisayach, to the person who is going to marry you. There's only one thing in the world that Naomi owns. You know, she has no material possessions anymore. It's all wiped out. She only has the piece of land which belonged to her husband, Elimelech. And that piece of land right now, it hasn't been farmed in 10 years. There's no revenue coming from the land. But she can sell it to raise some money. I remember in Parag Dalid, Boaz is going to talk to Ploni Almoni. And first he's going to say, hey, you want to redeem the field that Naomi is selling? And Ploni Almoni is going to say, sure. And then Boaz is going to say, well, there's fine print. Whoever is going to buy the field is also going to have to marry Ruth. And then all of a sudden, Ploni Almoni checks out. But the way the Sepharno understands what Naomi's plan is that Naomi is willing to sell the only thing she owns to give as a dowry for Ruth. How is Ruth possibly going to get married? She has to bring a dowry into the wedding, but Naomi has nothing to provide her with. So Naomi's plan is to provide the only material possession that she owns. Rus will be, we're going to redeem the field, but Naomi is not going to see a red cent of the money. Well, the end of the Megillah, we don't see Boaz write a check to Naomi for the field. Why not? Why doesn't Boaz, we have the whole chalipin, we have the whole process, the whole elaborate kinyan with the shoe, where the right to redeem the field is transferred from Ploni Almoni to Boaz, but Boaz never pays cash to Naomi. The reason is, because Rus brings that field into the wedding, into the marriage. So Naomi is left without any money. She has no possessions. So she's willing to do that for Naomi, so that Rus So that Ruth can get married. The third point we see, the chesed, the self-sacrifice that Naomi exhibits towards her daughter-in-law. Her fourth point, and we have just two more quick ones. This is a nice catch I saw that Yael Ziegler had in her book on Ruth, which I really can't recommend strongly enough. It's big, it's heavy, but there's a lot of wealth in there. So she points out that Naomi and the Peshat and the Pesukim at least helps guide Ruth very patiently into this alien society, this alien culture that she's come into. We've seen that Moab was infamous for being exceptionally sexually promiscuous, going back to the very founding of the nation. Me'av, from my fathers, what the nation is called. The daughters of Moab, the women of Moab, who were seducing Bnei Yisrael at Baal Peor, the whole story at the end of Parshas Balak, beginning of Parshas Pinchas. So coming into the modest society of Bnei Yisrael, Yael Ziegler points out an interesting diuk in the Pesukim. In Pasuk Ches, Boaz tells Rus, you are going to be able to glean in the field. Begam lo sabri mizek yo vecho sid bakin im narosai. Cleave to my young women who are working in my field. Right, the Na'arot. He has Na'arot working in the field, and he wants Rus to cleave to them. Remember, a couple weeks ago, we pointed out, this is a Mida Keneged Mida reward for Rus. Rus cleaves to Naomi. Now Rus gets to cleave to the women in the field getting food. And it's very clear that Boaz means it when he says, you're going to be with my Na'arot. Your eyes could go on the field. The Halach Acharehen. Go after them. Right? So it's Yukotzrun Acharehen. Boaz is only telling her to be with the women. What about the men? He has men working for him as well. Boaz continues and he says, Halo Tzivisias Hane'arim Levelti Nagech. I have men working for me also, and I've commanded them, leave you alone. So then Ruth says something funny a few seconds later, but she comes home and she talks to Naomi and gives her the report as to what happened. So Ruth says, Gam Kiamar Eli. So he said, yeah, right, stick with the lads who are with me. What do you mean the ne'arim? It should be the ne'arot. Yeah, Ziegler points out that Naomi catches this and Naomi guides Rus. And Naomi says, actually, Rus, you may have missed the subtlety of this, but Boaz was not just telling you to go with his workers, to go with the people who are on his staff. Go with his maidens, right? That's exactly, she's reinforcing, she's guiding Rus to understand what it was that Boaz wanted her to do. She's being attentive. She's understanding, being sympathetic, understanding where her things could get lost in translation for Rus. And she's filling that in. And then sure enough, in Pasuk of Gimel, Batibak b'na'aros Boaz. And it worked out that way, that Rus is with the right people. She is with specifically the maiden. Now, and the last point in Rus in Naomi's favor that we should point out, just to build it up at the beginning of the shiur, we saw this, I think we saw a couple weeks ago, that Rus is consistently encouraged by Naomi. Both in Perek Beis and Perek Gimel, Rus, who is a woman who is so hesitant to speak, so emphasizing of action, and so mistrusting of words, both in Perek Beis when she comes home from the field, and Perek Gimel when she comes home from the field, and Boaz has promised her the world, he's promised her food, and he's promised her marriage. So Naomi understands the fear and the doubts and the mistrust that Rus understandably harbors without her even bringing it out, and she addresses it and is able to instantly comfort and encourage and reinforce her daughter-in-law. Put it all together, there's no question there is a lot of good which is kind of coming out of Naomi, really from the beginning of the Megillah to that. But all that being said, and as important is for all that to have been said, if we really go through the Megillah and look carefully at a few points, we see again and again and again a lot of complexity. I would honestly just say sketchiness. There are a lot of things that Naomi does that are sketchy. No better word. Either it could be understood for better, but a lot of times where it's like, there's questionable decisions here. There's questionable statements, questionable activities, some of it even alarmingly so. We'll trace a few of the first is the original sin, What's the original sin in Megillah? It's her, them going down to Moab in the first place. Say, on the one hand, we're going to jump up and we're going to say, ah, you can't blame Naomi. It was Elimelech who went down. And there's no question that the Megillah presents it that way. Vayelech ish mi beis lechem Yehuda. And he goes and he brings along his wife and his kids. So this could be understood as really being Elimelech being the proactive one and Naomi just following along. A couple of psukim later, when Naomi's sons marry Moabite women, so the Megillah specifically says, Vayes ulahem, nashim Moabios. They married Moabite women. Naomi is not presented in the psukim here as being the shadchan. She was not the one who was making it happen. It seems like, at least it's presented to us, as Mahlon and Kilion's own initiative. They're the ones going out and marrying Moabite women. At the same time, we can't deny that we do not see any protest from Naomi, right? At minimum, she is not somebody who is asserting her. The best we can put it is that she is not asserting herself and pushing back at the poor decisions of those around her, right? I think that's the best way we can say it. It's a reasonable way to say it. After all, they're going to be punished, they're going to be killed, and she's going to survive. But there's something very troubling over here. Furthermore, a little later on in the pasuk, Shema Achas Arpa, Shema Shenis Rus, Vayeshvu Sham Ke'eser Shanim. They dwell there for about 10 years. The pasuk Dalet here is the capstone of a transition of the whole family becoming more and more embedded and assimilated into Moabite society. They began Lagur, just to temporarily dwell. Then Vayehiyu Sham, they were there. And then Vayeshvu Sham, then they settled there. Them settling there is not just Mahlon and Kilion. Naomi is also settling there. Vayeshvu Sham. If we look at the Sephardim has a couple of really astonishing comments at the beginning of the parak over here. So first, Vayesulahem Nashim Moavio says the Sfarno. So he has the insight. Leshtakeya. So now at least Mahlon and Kilion, they plan on permanently dwelling there. Velo lagur belvad, and not just to dwell temporarily. Now, as we'll see, I think the Sephardim thinks that this was not only the plan of Mahlon and Kilion, this was the plan of Naomi as well. In Pasuk Hey, the Megillah tells us the most tragic line in the Megillah. Vatisha'er ha'isha mishnei yelada u'me'isha. The woman was left without her children and without her husband after their death. So the Sepharno, I think, is picking up. What does it mean that she remained? She remained, says the Sepharno, velo nasna lev lashuv la'aretz. She still doesn't go back. Her husband dies. Okay, she couldn't push around her husband. Maybe. Maybe he was on calling the shots. She doesn't assert her will with her kids. Maybe they're very strong-willed sons. Maybe. They're dead, and she still stays there. She doesn't go back until one pasuk later when she hears that there is food in Eretz Yisrael. It's not like she wanted to go back, but she was just held back by her family. The Sepharno points out the family is dead, but she remains. She doesn't go back right away. And then pasuk Vav, the Sepharno triples down, and he says, why is Naomi going back? She's not going back because, you know, she feels unbelievably guilty. Her husband, Elimelech, had responsibility to society and he shirked it. And now she's going to step in. No, it's because now there's food. Before it was bad economic decision. Now it's a good economic decision. She wasn't motivated by this burning desire to leave Moab. She is, because now it's a good time to leave. So you take these comments by the Sepharno, and while at the same time we can understand and sympathize with Naomi, and she's not the bad guy in these psukim, that's Elimelech, Mahlon, and Kilion are the real disappointments, but still there is at minimum a lot of imperfection here. There are decisions that if Naomi could have done it again, she probably would have, right? There's a complicated nature to her character in a way that we never have with Rus or with Boaz, ever, right? There's no second guessing, no armchair quarterbacking of any of the decisions that they make in the Megillah, already here from the beginning, there are a few that the Sefarno is racking up for us. This continues when Naomi talks to her daughters-in-law on the way back. Once again, we get two sides of Naomi. On the one hand, we see Naomi invoking the Shem Hashem, which is something that she does a lot. There's no question that Naomi is absolutely a mom. You know, she is somebody who absolutely has a very strong, and it's going to be bitter in a little bit, but she understands that Hashem's involved in the world. Yas Hashem imachem chesed asher asisim meisim imadi. Right, so she's speaking again, just like Boaz from the very beginning. She's mentioning the Shem Hashem. She's generous to her daughters-in-law. She's thankful for what they did, and then the problem is she wants to send them back. Now we can understand that why she'd want them to go back. Partially, it's not reasonable for them to stay with her. Partially, and this is a bit of a pattern with Naomi, is that she assumes that they're acting like normal, self-interested people, like everybody from the civilization where she comes from Eretz Yisrael at the time of the Shoftim. And at least when it comes to Arpa, she's right. She says it's not in your self-interest. It doesn't make any sense for you to come. Halachically, we know Chazal derived from Naomi's behavior that we do not encourage people when they first show up to a Beis Din to convert. So there are definitely good reasons and understandable reasons why Naomi would encourage Rus and Arpa to go home. The problem, though, where things again get sketchy is Pasuk Tezfah, where after Arpa goes back, so Naomi says to Rus, el ama the el Eloheha, your sister-in-law has returned to her nation and to her gods. Shuvi acharei v'mteich. You go back after your sister-in-law. The obvious question is, wait a second, is Naomi telling Rus to return to her gods just like Arpa did? Because if so, that is a very, very troubling line. So the Sefarno actually denies it. You know, the Sefarno, who's kind of beating up on Naomi in the beginning of the parak, now he says, no. Read the pasuk carefully. Shuvi acharei v'mteich. El ameich, go back to your nation. Lo el Elohecha kamoa. Not to your gods. Go back after Arpa halfway. Now, the nation, yes. The gods, no. You're going to follow the seven mitzvahs of Bnei Noach. You're not going to go back to the god. That's how the Sefarno reads the pasuk. Most of the Mefarshim, though, and for good reason, don't read it that way. Mari Krah, for example, you know, says the exact name. He says, what do you mean? Mari Krah says, where should you go back? Shuvi acharei v'mteich. Go back after your sister-in-law. El ameich ve'el Elohayach. Go back to your nation and go back to your gods. What is going on where Naomi is telling Rus to go back to her gods? So the Akedas Yitzchak, you know, a little bit later, so he quotes the Ibn Ezra and the Ralbag. Ibn Ezra and the Ralbag made it even worse, because the question we need to ask is, and if we're doing like a Machlon and Kilyon Shir, a Geirah Shir, this would be something to focus on more, but for our purposes, we're focusing just on the Chesed element of the Megillah. It's played less of a role in our analysis, but it is very important to think, did Rus and Arpa convert before they married Machlon and Kilyon? So Ibn Ezra and the Ralbag assume that they did. And then the Akedas Yitzchak is shocked. He says, if it was a legitimate Geirus, if they had legitimately converted and they were fully fledged Jews, how could it be that Naomi is telling her to go back to her gods? He says, Ma'od espalei mikabala samba ze. I am not just stunned, I am extremely stunned, says the Akedas Yitzchak, by the Ibn Ezra and the Ralbag. Because they, in their analysis, convict Naomi of being a mesis, of enticing a Jew, Rus, right? Rus Jewish, to go back to Avodah Zarah. Shem kederem kein hu shayu kvar b'das Yisrael, eich yisita otan, l'shuv l'giyuta. How could she say, why do you go back to worship your old religion? Chalilu zeh me'rasha v'shaka, God forbid, says Akedas Yitzchak, it can't be. Now, Akedas Yitzchak, he understands, like the simple reading, that Naomi was telling Ruth to go back to her gods. So he explains that she thought that Ruth had never seriously meant to convert. So, okay, she was always not Jewish. Even if that's the case, though, still, she's telling her, go back to your gods. Akedas Yitzhak, Marikra, Ibn Ezra and the Rabag are making it even worse by saying that potentially she was a fully fledged Jew. If so, there is seriously questionable behavior over here. So once again, you know, the pattern asserts itself, where we have an episode which occurs, parts of it which are impressive, parts of it are sympathetic, parts of it are very subject to question. The same thing, for the third time, that pattern repeats itself at the end of the parak, at the end of the first parak, when Naomi gets back to Beis Lech. And Naomi has her lament. It's the second poem in the Megillah. The first poem was Rus's declaration to Naomi that she's never going to leave, that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. The second poem is Naomi's lament to the women of Beis Lech. And we read the lament she has. And again, partially we are extremely sympathetic. Partially, it's not something which sounds like something that the greatest of the great would have said. So just to see the way the lament works. So it's set up, you know, they call it like a ABC, AB. So Naomi says, "Al tikr enali Naomi, enali mara." Right, the first line is, "Don't call me Naomi, call me mara, call me bitter." Ki heimar shakai li ma'od. Hashem has been extremely bitter to me. Call me bitter because Hashem isn't bitter to me. Then we have the center of the lament, the key line. Ani meleya halachti v'rekam hashivani Hashem. Right? I left here full, and Hashem sent me back here empty. And the way it's set up, Ani is at the beginning of the line, and Hashem is at the end of the line. Everything is a mirror. This whole poem from Naomi is inverted. Everything is flipped. You can see even the structure, like this, right? Because her life has been inverted. Her life has been turned upside down. My name should be turned around. The poem is flipped. I came full. Hashem sent me back empty. Lama sikr eni li Naomi. Right? Now she goes back to the first line. Why would you call me Naomi? And then she goes back to the second line. Hashem anabi. Hashem has tortured me. Vishakai heirali. And Hashem has done evil to me. Now, we could do fancy poem analysis, but just take a step back and think, like, what is Naomi saying? On the one hand, how could we not sympathize with the suffering she's gone through? And Chazal dramatized this. You know, she used to be wealthy, now she's impoverished. She used to be well-fed, now she's starving. She used to be well-clothed, now she comes back wearing rags. So her husband is dead, her children are dead. She has no future. She's totally humiliated, starving, afraid. It's the most pathetic scene. It is so tragic. And we can absolutely empathize with the pain which comes out of every word that Naomi says of her. But at the same time, the one piece that unites the poem, one thing that happens again and again, is Naomi's complaining about what Hashem does to her. Heimar shakai li ma'od. Hashem was extremely bitter to me. Hashem sent me back empty. Hashem tortured me. Hashem was evil. Hashem did bad to me. And the theme is complaining about what Hashem does. No, there's no Aaron HaKohen behavior over here. There's no Vayidom Aaron. There's no Tziduk Hadin. There's no quiet acceptance. Now, what Aaron does in his moment is heroism, right? For all time, we look to what Aaron did as the most unbelievable acceptance that a person could muster. And that's been a role model for B'nai Yisrael for all time. Naomi, sketchy. We see both sides. We can't, God forbid, criticize what she does in the moment, but it's not something that we look to as a role model. It's just not. So we have then three episodes in the first parak of Naomi where we see she is complicated, much more so than Rus and much more so than Boaz. You should understand, this is a bit of a side lesson, but I think it's an important one to extract from over here. One lesson Megillah has for us is the power of complicated tshuva. Naomi is a complicated person. At least at this stage in the Megillah, she is not at a state of real perfection. But you know what? Complicated tshuva counts as well. the word that comes up again and again in the first parak, by far the most times, is to return. It's mentioned 12 times in the Megillah, in the first parak. Six times, actually, it references returning to Moav, and six times it references returning to Yehuda. You know, you could return. The question is, where do you return to? There's a perfect balance over here. But that Mikra actually points out that I think Moav and Beis Lechem are each mentioned seven times. You know, which direction are you going to go? You know, in the Arpa direction to go back? Are you going to go in a bad way? Or are you going to go in the Rus direction to go back in a good way? You know, undoing what Lot did. But you know what? She comes back. The bottom line is, it's not perfect, but the parak ends. V'atashav na'ami v'rus ha'mavya kalasa ima hashava mistei Moav. They came back. They came back. They're back. And, you know, we're going to talk about chesed for the imperfect, but what allows Naomi, the matir, you would say, what makes Naomi eligible for all the chesed she's going to get is the fact that there is tshuva. Maybe it wasn't under ideal circumstances. The Sefarno said she didn't do it for the most pristine of motivations. And it didn't happen right away. And she's complaining about HaKadosh Baruch Hu when she comes back. You know what? At the end of the day, she got up, she packed up, she was willing to face the humiliation of everybody seeing her and all the women around are saying, Hazos Naomi, this is Naomi. Nobody lifts a finger to help her. No one reaches out to assist. And she's willing to absorb all that to come back. We'll take imperfect tshuva. Imperfect tshuva counts. And that is going to be enough of a zechus for Naomi for everything to be turned around. And we'll see by the end of the Megillah, she will be perfectly restored. The imperfect tshuva is going to be enough for perfect repair. And I think the key idea is that we do chesed for imperfect people. And we need to focus on the positives and focus on the reasons why they need and deserve and should get our help. Right? Focus on the positive shoves, not the negative ones. Naomi has both. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they'll focus on the positive, and so should we. So we then move to Parak Beis. And we're going to continue just Naomi's whole career has this sketchy two-handed piece to it. But as we continue, I want to mix in a different piece over here, which is to show in Parak Beis the impact that chesed has. Naomi, at the beginning of the parak, it's shocking. So the Megillah tells us that Naomi has a rich, powerful relative named Boaz. So what should happen in Pasuk Beis is, after being told that Naomi has this relative, we should be told, Naomi told her daughter-in-law, Ruth, hey, we have a rich, powerful relative, Boaz, who has many fields and lots of grain, and it's the harvest time, and we're starving. Why don't we go to him, go to his fields to get some food? That's what Pasuk Beis should have said. Instead, Pasuk Beis is totally inverted. Rus is the one who takes the initiative. She tells Naomi, hey, we're starving. Maybe I'll go and I'll glean some food. And Naomi says, Lachiviti, go, my daughter. Naomi doesn't tell her where to go. She doesn't suggest, hey, I recommend the fields of Boaz. The Megillah tells us it's Hashkacha. Vayiker mikreha chalkasa sodeh leboaz. She happens to come to Boaz's field, but why did Hashem need to get involved and get her to go to the field of Boaz? Naomi should have given her the directions and say, great, go to Boaz's field. He's a relative. He'll take care of you. What's clear from the Megillah at this stage is that Naomi feels defeated. Naomi is in a state of yeush. She's in a state of resignation. You even see it from the speech pattern we have. We saw in the couple of weeks ago by Rus. Rus doesn't talk at all. Whenever Rus talks to anybody, Rus talks a little bit, and the other person talks a whole lot more. But one exception is right here, where Rus, you know, has to become the talkative one. How long have Rus been and Naomi been sitting in the house? You know, with it's been dead quiet. Naomi's not saying a word. There's nothing to do, nothing to eat. Finally, Rus says, hey, El Chano Hasadev Alakata Beshiba Lim, Acharim Tzachin Beinav. Let me go and I'll get some food. Rus starts talking up. And Naomi says, Lachibiti, go. Go. She doesn't give any encouragement, no advice, no proactivity, nothing which Naomi is going to do a whole bunch later on. She is resigned. You want to go? Go ahead. Naomi had no faith in Klal Yisrael. She had no faith when they left. She had no faith when she came back. By the way, she was correct. Nobody did anything for her. Nami is absolutely in tune with where B'nai Yisrael are holding. This is not a society of chesed. Nobody reached out to help her, even though they were stunned by what a pathetic, tragic sight she was. Nobody reached out to help, as she expected. You know, Arpa lived down to Naomi's expectations. Klal Yisrael lived down to Naomi's expectations, and she is defeated. And then we get to the end of the parak, and all of a sudden, when Rus comes back with all of the grain that she has from Boaz's field, it breathes life into Naomi. You can feel it jump off the page. Look all of a sudden at how verbal Naomi becomes. Naomi sees what's going on. Where do you get all this from? What do you do? The person who recognized you, he should be blessed. She finds the person is Boaz, and she exclaims, Baruch Hu Hashem, Asher lo azav chasdo asachayim esameisim. And then she talks again. You can hear the energy, the excitement, the life being breathed back into Naomi, and things are the way they're supposed to be. Where once again, Rus just says a couple of words, and Naomi talks and talks. Things are getting back to normal. The chesed of Boaz is not just provided food for Rus and for Naomi. The Megillah is giving us a window into how this is bringing Naomi back to life. They are being recognized, they're being seen, and now all of a sudden it's like putting water on a flower, on a flower, which is wilting. Jumps back up, right? She talks and talks and talks. And it really runs straight into Perek Gimel, where Naomi immediately proactively jumps in and says, okay, here's what we're going to do. We've been waiting around the whole summer for Boaz to propose marriage to you. He hasn't done so. Let's take matters into our own hands. So she goes from being the defeated, resigned personality at the beginning of the parak, where once again, we could look at that critically and say, you know, suck it up, take care of your daughter-in-law, give her the advice. At the same time, we can understand why she feels defeated. So that fits into the pattern we've had from parak Aleph of looking at Naomi from two perspectives. We also see in parak Beis the impact that chesed has on her. Okay, now parak Gimel is the last parak where Naomi is active. And once again, for the fifth time, it is going to fit the pattern of being able to look at all of Naomi's decisions from really two different perspectives. So Naomi, four psukim, right? She talks a lot. And she says, here's what we're going to do. Right? You're going to go there. You're going to wash yourself. You're going to anoint yourself. You're going to put on your nice clothes. You're going to go down to the granary. No one's going to see you. And you're going to lie down. You're going to reveal his legs. And he will tell you what to do. The amount of sexual language, which is in these psukim, really in the parak as a whole, but I highlighted the ones in these psukim again and again and again. Language of yidiya, to know, which has a sexual connotation in Tanakh. Lishkov, to lie down, bia, right, to come towards, legaloth, to reveal. There's a lot of, like, it's the pshat is what is Naomi telling Boaz? You know, especially the bottom of Farshim point this out, and you look at the parallels to the episode of Tamar. Boaz had all summer long to propose marriage to Rus. He didn't do it. The harvest is over, so now Naomi says, okay, we need to take matters into our own hands. And just like Tamar, after waiting around and waiting around for Yehuda, and he wouldn't give her his son Shelah, so she has to seduce Yehuda. So Naomi is telling Rus the same thing. You're going to have to seduce Boaz. And then once that's happened, then he'll be moved to marry you, just like Tamar did with Yehuda. And then Yehuda goes ahead with the Geula, with the redemption, Parshas Vayeshev. So the same thing is going to have to happen here, right? The Megillah is very modest about how it frames it, but the implication that's involved throughout is very clear. And once again, that can be looked at in one of two ways. We can look at that and say, look, you know, in the Chumash, Tamar is seen as a very impressive personality. And she didn't have a choice. And this was, you know, desperate times call for desperate measures. And this is what has to be done to continue the next generation. She had no choice. On the other hand, first of all, it still is kind of makes us feel uncomfortable. You know, it's the reason why the Megillah is very, very, what's what I'm looking for? References, kind of is very modest about what's happening, gives us a lot of hints, a lot of innuendo, but doesn't come out and openly say. You know, Nami doesn't say, seduce Boaz in the field. It's much more modest than that. But the discomfort can clearly, clearly be felt. Now, what's motivating Nami is interesting. For once again, Nami underestimates Boaz. You know, Nami underestimated Rus. She correctly estimated Arpa. In Perek Beis, she correctly estimated the lack of chesed from all of Klal Yisrael, but underestimated the chesed from Boaz. She underestimates Boaz in Perek Gimel as well, because she assumes that Boaz is not proposing marriage to Rus because he's not interested in going ahead with it. He doesn't want to do it. We find out from what Boaz says in Pasuk Yud that the reason why Boaz did not propose anything was because he assumed that Rus would not have been interested. Boaz is stunned. He taft chastecha acharom and harishon levelti lecha sachareha bachurim im dalve im ashir. He can't believe it, that she would stick to family loyalty and to responsibility and to redeem her dead husband and mother-in-law's family, by marrying this decrepit old man. That was the actual motivation that Boaz had. Naomi, who comes from Klal Yisrael, you know, Yael Ziegler is a very, very interesting idea. She suggests that Naomi in many ways represents Klal Yisrael. You know, we're good, but we have our flaws and we struggle. Eventually we kind of do the right thing. And there's a lot that could be said that's good about us. But Naomi throughout the Megillah is like very in tune with where B'nai Yisrael are holding in Sefer Shoftim. The surprise of the Megillah is that there are these two people, Rus and Boaz, who break the paradigm. They break the mold. And she doesn't see it coming, you know, for good reason. But be that as it may, bottom line, by the time we get to the end of Perek Gimel, so we've seen consistently, you know, Naomi kind of, every time it's just, you could look at it in one of two ways. There's a lot to second guess, even as there's also a lot to be impressed by. And we see the growth, right? We've over the course of Naomi, we go from Naomi and Perek Beis being resigned, being resentful towards the Kadosh Baruch Hu, towards the people around her. So all of a sudden, in the end of Perek Beis, she's giving out brachos. She's looking after Rus. She's rather than sending Rus away, she's trying to take care of Rus. She's giving up everything that she has for Rus. You know, it's a tough world, and sometimes you have to get messy. But we see her growth even as we consistently have this, you could look at her decisions from either perspective. Last point we should note about the complicated nature of doing chesed for Naomi. Naomi doesn't really ever openly say thank you. Now think about it. Rus was overwhelmed with gratitude towards Boaz in Perek Beis. Boaz is overwhelmed with I guess we can call it gratitude and being impressed with Rus in Perek Gimel. Naomi is the one who we're doing things for time and time and time again. Now, Rus is the one getting her the food. Rus is the one coming with her. Rus is the one willing to throw out all her dignity to seduce Boaz on Naomi's behalf. Rus is the one who gives her a child. Naomi in the Megillah never says thank you for any of that. She says, thank you in the beginning thank you for taking care of my dead sons, and now goodbye. We never see another element of gratitude from Naomi. And again, I think the reason why is because the Megillah wants to emphasize for us, we do chesed not for the thank yous. And we do chesed not because the people who are the recipients of the chesed are Rus personalities. They're Naomis. They're people who are like us, you know, people who are good people. People who also have flaws, people who it's up to us. If we want, we can focus on the flaws, but if we want, we could focus on the good. And we may not get all the thanks that we'd like to have. We don't do chesed for the thank you. We do chesed for the impact that it can make we do chesed because look at where Naomi was holding at the beginning of Perek Beis, totally defeated. And look at where Naomi is holding at the end of Perek Beis, beginning of Perek Gimel, where she has come back to life and she is now trying to do chesed in kind. She is now thinking of ways to try to get her daughter-in-law married off and sell off her field, the only thing she owns in the world, in order to take care of her daughter-in-law. The impact that chesed can have, even and maybe especially when done for people who, it's complicated, right? Hashem does that that chesed. Hashem recognizes the imperfect tshuva, and we should as well. And the last thing to do to close this out is to see that while the tshuva may have been complicated, may not have been perfect, the kind of tshuva you'd have in a laboratory, right? Naomi's behavior may not have been totally perfect. The repair, the tikkun that the chesed pulls off, absolutely is totally perfect, right? Beginning, I put together 10 of these. We could have done more, but the 10 most obvious ones. Parak Aleph, we begin with the crisis. Naomi has no children. She has no kids. By the end, Yulad Bein, the Naomi, right? She now has a child. We begin in Parak Aleph with the locals who are horrified about Tamar Nahazos Naomi. The women say, "Is this Naomi?" In Perek Dalet, we go back to the women of Beis Lachem, and now they're giving brachos, and they're saying all these beautiful things. They're so happy. It's totally turned around. Number three, we begin the Megillah with Naomi leaving to go to Moab, and we end with Naomi being established in Eretz Yisrael permanently. The bracha that's being given is that the child, this Oved, should be like the offspring of Rachel and Leah, asher batu shtehem as Beis Yisrael. Right? This child, asay chayil be'afrasa u'krash shame be'beis lechem. This kid is going to have a permanent impact in Beis Lechem. We began with them leaving. We're ending with the child creating a permanent legacy back here in Eretz Yisrael. Number four, we begin the Megillah with the change of Naomi's name, where she says, "Don't call me Naomi, call me Mara." And we end with the naming of the child who has been born, Batikra and Hashemo, Obed. We're naming the new child. We have the bitter name change for Naomi. Now we have the ecstatic name being given to the child. Number five, beginning, Hashem remembered everybody else. Bakar Hashem es amo. Hashem remembered his people. Hashem is busy punishing Naomi. She's losing her husband. She's losing her sons. Meanwhile, everyone else back in Eretz Yisrael is being given food. And then we get back to Perek Dalet. And now Hashem once again is giving Naomi. Megillah says, "V'itin Hashem la hirayon." Hashem gave pregnancy to Rus, and that's the child which is going to be given to Naomi. Likewise, in Perek Aleph, Hashem gives Naomi suffering. In Perek Dalet, Hashem gives Naomi a child. Number seven, Naomi returns empty from Eretz Yisrael, from Moab. In Perek Aleph, Rikam Ashivani Hashem, and then Vayat lach lemeshiv nefesh. Right, meshiv Hashivani. I was returned empty. This child will be for you a meshiv nefesh. She will return, or he'll settle your soul. Resolution. In Parak Aleph, number 8, Naomi says to Rus, "I don't have any kids. I can't give you any children." In Parak Dalet, Naomi is given a child by Rus herself. Number 9, Chazal have this one, and we can see where they would get it from. Right? It's part of the same pattern of seeing things totally flip from Parak Aleph to Parak Dalet. Chazal darshan, Mileya halachti. When Naomi said, "I left and I was full," Chazal said, literally, she was full. What does it mean? Shahisi mi'uberes. That Naomi was actually pregnant. And Chazal understand not only did Naomi lose a husband and two children, but she also, probably first, had a miscarriage. And now, Naomi, who is too old to have children anymore, somehow has a child anymore. Right? Once again, Chazal picking up on this idea of everything being turned around. And finally, the last inversion, and here we go from the individual to the national, is the Megillah began by telling us, "Vayhi bimei shefot hashoptim," everything began in the days of the judging of the judges. That whole ethos, that whole value system of corruption and selfishness and din and judgment and refusal to do chesed, that the whole book of Shoftim is all about from beginning to end, and it gets worse and worse from chapter to chapter. And we end the end of Perek Dalet with the lineage of the kingship. Obed holid es Yishai, Yishai holid es David. the foundation of the monarchy, David, the Malchus of Chesed, is being created. So I think just to sum up, right, the Naomi in Parak Aleph complains about the punishment that Hashem imposes upon him. And it sounds like Eov in many ways, or we can sympathize, but you know, in many ways, it's we'd want more. Naomi is an imperfect person, but there is a lot of good that she does, and we focus on the good that she does. And Hashem's kindness, Hashem's generosity, is not imperfect. Right? By the end of the Megillah, we don't say, Hashem does not say to Naomi, okay, you did imperfect tshuva, you had good but not great behavior, so I will respond in kind. Hashem has totally turned things around. Hashem responds to Naomi with pure chesed. And Rus and Boaz do exactly the same thing. They never say, well, I'm going to hold back, you know, 40% or 30% because I don't see that coming from Naomi. They see the good in Naomi and they see only the good in Naomi. And if that is the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu reacts when he does chesed for us, if that's the way that our human chesed role models, Boaz and Rus act, when they do chesed, then I think that is the key lesson for Naomi, is to recognize, as Chazal do, recognize the bright side, recognize the pleasantness, recognize the righteousness that pervaded Naomi, rather than focus on the bad. We focus on the good, and we respond with just pure pure chesed, ultimately, hopefully, leading to the refoundation of Malchus Beis David and the return of Mashiach M'heri Amin. So, Shvach, if anybody has any questions, we'd love to hear, but I wish everybody a Chag Sameach, and hopefully an enjoyable time reading Miguel Sruss this year.
Thank you so much. Thank you
so much. Thank you.
Sameach, Chag Sameach.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Chag Sameach.